Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome here to the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we take that seriously, so we've been bringing in all the candidates. Wish we could have done it more with our city council candidates. There's so many that won't fit in studios. But there are many races out there that, like that, are very interesting as well. As you can see, Odette Ramos has picked up in her race against Carl Stokes, where at least two of them are going neck and neck at this race in their district. And Elijah Cumming jumped in the race and endorsed Michael Johnson, which is something that nobody thought he would do in his race in the 9th District. So we'll be watching those very carefully. But right now we're about to have a conversation with Jody Landers, who is running to be mayor of the city of Baltimore in the Democratic primary. He was vice president of the Greater Board of Realtors of Baltimore for how long?
13 years.
13 years, long time, I know. Always a guest on our show talking about those issues for our city. And, of course, was a former city council member for two terms,
8 years, right, from 83 to 91.
And decided, for some unknown reason, to jump back into the race and get back into politics, which he ran away from as a smart man. Now he's back in it. So, number here is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. A decision has to be made, and you need to vote if you're a citizen of the city. And get out there and make a choice for the future of Baltimore. And Jody Andrews thinks he's that future, or part of it anyway. So, Jody, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks. Nice to be here again, Mark.
I asked you a question. It's something I went to one of our candidate forums. You said something that got a lot of boos from the audience.
Mm.
You said when we were talking about it, you literally talked about a snack tax. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So I always wanted to ask you a follow-up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And ask you why you thought that was a good idea, and not to put a slant on it, but let me just put a little slant. You can unslant it back, which is that people, I think, were upset about that because they see it as a tax on the poor, that it doesn't affect the wealthy, it doesn't affect the middle class, it affects poor people, places where there are food deserts, no decent food, and in hundreds of neighborhoods in this city. And I think that's why people responded to you that way, because it was a tax on the poor, and they're saying we're taxed enough. This is not the way to get us to eat, our communities to eat better.
Yeah. I think the question came up in response to the obesity and, and health in the neighborhood. And
at least you tried to answer that question like some other candidates who just made a joke of it. But you,
Well, in fact, you know, Ralph Moore, who you know, he said he was sitting in a group and he thought the people were going to come up over the chairs. They went, "No, we want our Doritos." Anyway. You know, let me qualify this. I don't think it makes sense to have a tax like that in a single subdivision. So I'd be very much opposed to it for just Baltimore City. But when I look at the environmental needs and the health needs in our communities, we do need to have some sources of revenue. And frankly, I think it makes sense to tax the waste stream. It's a waste stream. You know, I participate annually in a cleanup of the Herring Run Stream.
That's your far neighborhood from where you live.
And I've participated for years, for 40 years in this. And it is disgusting to see all of these cellophane bags and bottles and things that wash into the streams, from the streets, into the Patapsco, into the bay. We're soiling our environment in addition to the health issues. So I think it makes sense. Just like years ago when the state put in a fee on tires. When you go and you buy a new set of tires, you pay a disposal fee. I think it makes sense to start to look at how we're going to pay for the disposal of all of this stuff, which a lot of it is it will last for hundreds of years. So, you know, I don't think the city should do it alone. I think a tax like that has to happen at the state level or minimally at the regional level. You can't put a tax like that in effect where you just provide an incentive for people to grow across the line or figure out other ways to skirt the tax. The fact is, it's kind of like the gasoline tax. I mean, the idea behind it is the more you consume, the more you drive, the higher, you know, the more use you get out of the road, so you're going to pay a higher share. I just think we need to look at those kinds of fees as opposed to these broad general fees like things like the property tax. And the property tax is really an interesting one because if you talk to a lot of renters in the city, they'll say, no, that doesn't affect me, as if they're not paying the property tax as part of their rent, which they are. And in fact, in this town, the only people who get a benefit is owner-occupants. Investors or rental properties get no tax credit. They get no homestead credit. So in many cases, renters are actually paying a higher share of property taxes in their rent than owner-occupants are paying. Now, but it's hidden. They don't see it.
You mentioned property taxes. And, folks, the number here is 410-319-8888. And Mac is the first caller up, so I know you're listening. Let me ask this property tax question. They want to come to your calls and other callers at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook page, Mark Steiner Show, Mark Steiner Facebook page, and ask questions on there as well. And I'll look at those pages as we talk and pull some questions out as we did the other night. But 410-319-8888, SteinerShow at gmail.com. And Mac, right to this question, we're coming to your question, the first caller up. Property taxes. Mm-hmm. Now, in this race for the Democratic nomination, you have been kind of leading the charge on property taxes, I would say, of all the candidates, and pushing this idea. Mm-hmm. And again, we've talked about this in the forum, so let's push this a bit more. I mean, some people are saying, "Hey, okay, this is fine, but this is like an issue of the middle class. It doesn't affect poor people, and the issue of Baltimore affects a lot of poor people." A and B, that you cut property taxes, you cut our budget, and we can't afford to cut the budget in Baltimore because it's down to bare mm-hmm. bones now, and they're mm-hmm. closing rec centers and can't fill potholes, and so. Cut the property tax, but where does our government go? Where do our public services, services go?
You know, this notion that in order to cut the property tax, we have to slash services is part of the fear tactic that the current mayor is putting out. I mean, I've heard some of her radio and commercials and basically trying to say, you know, these people who are talking about a property tax reduction are reckless and they're talking about cutting city services. No, what I'm talking about is, how are we going to grow the tax base, the revenue base, to be able to pay for city services? Cutting the property tax is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. It's a way to grow our population, grow our tax base. The reason I think it's so critical is when you look at every metric in terms of measuring the health of the city, loss of population, 120,000 people over the last 20 years, we lose jobs every year in Baltimore City. We have 2 million square feet of vacant office space. Not just property taxes, but overall tax burden. We have the highest tax burden in the state of Maryland. Now, how are we going to attract new residents, attract businesses into Baltimore City and investment in Baltimore City? You know, when you look at it on the residential side, here's a real simple equation. A $100,000 house in Baltimore County will cost the buyer $100 a month in property tax. $100 a month in property taxes. A $100,000 house in Baltimore City will cost the buyer $200 a month in property taxes. Now, let's compare the level of services between the two subdivisions. Are we getting an additional $100 a month in services? That's part of the problem. Every year, even though we've had this high property tax, we see a cutback, a reduction in services. This year is a good example. In the budget, there's money to hire 300 police. At the same time, we're going to be closing and reducing services at rec centers. I think you have to have a balance. I mean, I would actually hire fewer police to start in order to maintain the rec centers. I also don't think it makes sense to eliminate free bulk trash collection because I think that's going to result in dirtier neighborhoods. So, no, my whole approach to this is, how are we going to bring investment and buyers back into the city? We have 47,000 vacant housing units in Baltimore City. That's 15% of all housing units are sitting vacant. That's population loss. It negatively affects the quality of life in neighborhoods, creates health, safety hazards, helps feed the crime problem in those neighborhoods. And every study I've read shows one vacant house on a block can reduce property values by 6 to 10%. So it's an issue of economic health for the city. And no, I'm not talking about irresponsibly going in and slashing services. What I'm talking about is how are we going to position the city to grow our population and our job base, because I'm including, you know, commercial in this as well.
Let me open the phones here. I know some emails coming in. I want to come back to ask you specifically all the things you just mentioned that we're going to come back to, and I'm going to ask you what you're going to do about it, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all complain about it, but what do we do about it?
Good.
410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We have two emails coming in. Let's go to the phones. Your questions for Jody Landers, who wants to be the next mayor of Baltimore City. 410-319-8888. And Mac in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, Jody, how you doing?
I'm well.
Glad. I like your plan. I think it's very nice. My question is the prison population in this area. And I notice how a lot of the prisons are now being highlighted, you know, all across the area on the jobs that the prisons are doing and the prisoners are doing at these locations, being paid minimal amount of money for these jobs. Now, these jobs are coming out of the public sector going into the prison industry. So, you know, how would you work with these guys to get those jobs back into the public area, the arena, where people who are really suffering need these jobs? Because those guys are being paid, you know, 20, 35 cents an hour. I'll take my answer off the phone.
Yeah, thanks for that question. This is a really tough issue for the city and for a lot of municipalities around the country. Baltimore City has 9,000 returning ex-cons every year coming back to the city, and they're concentrated in three zip codes in the city. So, you know, I don't pretend to have an answer to this, but it is a serious problem for the city and the citizens and the quality of life in the city. You know, I certainly don't like the idea of taking jobs away from others, but on the other hand, I also think it's a good thing for inmates to get out, to be doing something productive, to be, you know, physically engaged. So I think you have to balance that need against the need to, say, have a full-time job. What I've learned in this campaign process and become acutely aware of is the number of people who are trying to get their lives back together. They've spent 5, 10, 15 years in prison. They get some training, they get some education, and they come out. They can't find a job. And this recession has really exacerbated that problem. I don't have a complete solution to that. It seems to me that what we're doing now is not working. What we have now is we have a federal tax credit. We have a state tax credit for businesses that offers them an income tax credit for every ex-con that they hire. It's good for 1 year. And then there's also a federal bonding program that's available to bond the businesses. But it only lasts for 6 months, which is not a long enough time to give somebody a decent trial. So we really need to look at what we're doing to try to encourage businesses to hire ex-cons and create jobs. The city's position is made doubly worse by what we just talked about, and that is the high cost of doing business in the city because of the property tax. You know, something that a lot of people aren't aware of, businesses also pay a personal income tax. So for every desk and copier and computer, they pay a personal property tax, and that tax is pegged at 2.5 times the property tax rate. So if you're a business, you're not only paying high property tax, you're paying 2.5 times the property tax for the valuation of your personal property. That's why we have so many businesses who are leaving the city or not even looking at locating in the city. So I think these issues, to me, are linked. I mean, the more businesses we can get to locate in the city, the more we're going to be able to provide jobs for people and open up opportunities for especially for this special population that just can't get a job.
410-319-8888. Travis, you're the next caller up. Let me read this email question came in, then we'll come back to your call. Reverend Meredith Moyse from Charles Village writes in, what are his ideas about stopping gang violence in Baltimore?
That's another great question. You know, I would actually like to open up a dialogue with gang leaders. I would like to see the mayor, the police department actually begin to have some dialogue with these gangs to understand better what their mode of operating is. They have structure. They have rules. I wonder if there's a way that we can help, you know, and they have discipline, too. So, you know, I'm thinking, is there a way that we can come to some agreements about what rules they're going to enforce? For example, you know, discharging a weapon in the presence of children or anywhere near there's a school or children are in present. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know this. I think we have to begin having a dialogue with them, and we're not going to solve this problem with just a kick in the doors, get tough approach. We're going to have to educate ourselves about the mode of operation of these gangs and do a better job of understanding how we can intervene in this process and hopefully shut off the flow of young people getting into these gangs.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Now, do some follow-ups here. I just want to get your thoughts on the air first. Travis, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Mr. Landers, in regards to you addressing the junk food tax, snack food tax, as a waste tax, it's really a regressive tax, and I find it troubling that a Democratic candidate would be proposing cutting back on taxes that are progressive, which is to say, if you own $1 million house and I own a $50,000 house, you're going to pay more taxes, and replacing that revenue stream with something that taxes the poor disproportionately. Give an example, say, like the gas tax you cited. Your Lexus and my car, my Chevy, take the same gas. We pay the same taxes on that gas, but I guarantee you it hurts me as a working guy a lot harder than it hurts you as a rich guy. And it really kind of upsets me to think that you regard people who work for a living in the city as simply a revenue stream, and you want to be the mayor of investors, and you say, oh, well, landlords shouldn't pay so many taxes, and businesses shouldn't pay so many taxes. Those are the people who have the money, and they should be paying more. They should contribute to bringing the city back from the brink, and they're not leaving necessarily because of taxes, because I'll tell you, I've lived in New York and L.A. They have plenty of businesses, and the taxes are much higher. They're leaving because North Avenue and Greenmount and all these places are a war zone. And it's just really upsetting to hear you say, oh, well, let's just cut these taxes on the quote-unquote job creators. Frankly, sir, you sound like a Republican.
I have heard that before, but actually I'm a lifelong Democrat. First, let me correct you. I don't drive a Lexus. I actually have a Jeep Liberty, and I actually wouldn't drive a Lexus. Too expensive. You know, again, I go back to my point. Reducing the tax is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. Businesses and people make decisions about where they're going to live based on the cash flow. And you said something that it feeds into this kind of misperception that people have. You said that it's the property owners that pay the tax on these rental units. It's the occupants of the rental units that pay the tax. And here's the rub in Baltimore City. If you own that $1 million property, you get a bigger tax break as an owner-occupant on that property than somebody who's renting a property. I can show you time after time in this city where a property is drawing $800 or $900 a month in rent, and it's being sold for $50,000. And if you do the math, you can find you'll see that the person could buy that house, pay $500 a month on a mortgage, including taxes and insurance. So they could save $300 a month on their housing costs. But we're not making it easy for people to do that. No, my whole approach here and the snack tax thing, I wasn't proposing it. I said it's something that should be looked at in terms of how we get control on all this waste that we're generating. And let me tell you, it's affecting the poorest neighborhoods the worst. I mean, drive through this city. I just was talking to Mark coming out here. You drive through neighborhoods in this city, and there's a lot of flooding taking place right now because the storm inlets are completely clogged up. And the city has no program to routinely go and clear those. There's a little section on Harford Road where the water now is way up over the curbs and it's getting into the houses. So in a lot of instances, it's the poorest neighborhoods who are suffering from this. So I understand what you're saying. I don't like the idea that it's regressive. But on the other hand, I don't know how we're going to come up with the money to be able to pay for these things.
Jody Landers is our guest. He's running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number. You got a decision to make next Tuesday if you're a citizen of the city of Baltimore. And if you live in the environs of the city of Baltimore, you have an interest in the future of the city because it's part of our large metropolitan area. And I think that whoever is mayor affects that entire area and the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll come back to these calls.
You know, when you talked about the gangs, it's interesting because you and I were talking about this. We actually met. You were a street club worker. Right. I was a 17-year-old kid on the street.
Right.
And Mark was assigned to work with different groups around the city to try to bring them into the mainstream, to try to keep them out of trouble. And that's how we met, 40-some years ago.
1970.
And we were just both agreeing we need to bring back that kind of program.
Street club workers were like gang workers.
Yes.
I have a question about that in a minute, what I'm going to come back to in terms of what the police union says. But let me read this email from Lou Fields. Lou Fields writes in, "It's time to hear from Jody. In the highly acclaimed movie Baby Boy, actress Taraji P. Henson seemed always to be asking Jody, Tyrese Gibson, two questions voters must ask Jody Landers' mayoral campaign. Where are you going and where have you been? Mr. Landers is a fine gentleman, soft-spoken, apparently a sensitive, caring man, now seeking the highest public office in Baltimore. Please ask Mr. Landers where he has been for the last 15 to 20 years, as we have not heard his voice on the city's troubling issues, such as public school education, smaller minority business empowerment, drug addiction, drug dealing, and the multiple problems in the city has wrestled with, city contracting, city quasi-public organizations doing private deals behind closed doors. As a real estate professional, why has he not responded to the 47,000 vacant houses that have plagued Baltimore since the 70s? Where have you been, Jody? Where are you going, Jody? Are you being out of elected office for over a decade? You reappear and want to be mayor. Big leap, and why now? Why not 2000 through 2007 when the city was just as bad as it is now? Why now, Jody?"
Great question. Actually, I have been in the trenches, and you know, I worked for a number of years with the Harbell Community Organization working on housing, sanitation, and health. And Harbell set up a community mental health center, and we had a drug counseling program, which still exists today. And we worked on organizing neighborhoods around, you know, health and safety and crime and all of that. So, and then I spent two terms on the Baltimore City Council, where I was a very active full-time council person, actually trying to improve city services, cut the tax rate even then, which didn't endear me to either William Donald Schaefer or Kurt Schmoke. And that was at a time when we actually had a larger population. The past 13 years, while I've been at the Board of Realtors, I have been working actively to promote the city as a place to live. I served as president of the Live Baltimore Home Center. I was on the board of directors there for several years. I've served on the board of directors of the Harford Center for Senior Citizens. Sheila Dixon, when she was elected mayor, asked me to co-chair a blue ribbon panel on taxes and fees. We issued a report making recommendations on how the city could begin reducing its property tax without slashing a single service. It was all based on other revenues, looking at how we can rebalance our revenue picture in the city and wean ourselves away from overdependence on the property tax. I participated in the land bank task force that Ms. Dixon put together. When O'Malley was mayor, I co-chaired a group called the Task Force on City Living, which made recommendations about how we could improve city life. So I've been there. I've been active in this. Why now? Because I've just reached the point where I am so frustrated with participating in these panels and these committees and issuing reports and spending months and months in doing it and only to have it go nowhere, because I don't believe we have an administration that understands the plight of the city and what needs to be done to turn the city around. That's why I'm in this race now, because I have a vision for the city that goes beyond just maintaining the status quo. We need to rebuild city government from the ground up, and we need to look at how we're going to pay for these services. I'm a lifelong city resident. You know, I remember driving through East Baltimore and down Gay Street and over in West Baltimore, out Park Heights, when those were thriving neighborhoods. They have been decimated. And the question for me is, how are we going to bring those neighborhoods back to life?
How do you bring Harford Road back? How do you bring Park Heights back? Because we talk about the Inner Harbor all the time,
right?
And all this glitzy stuff. How do you bring neighborhoods like Park Heights and Harford Road back?
Well, let me tell you what we do now, and this is one of the solutions that I have on the property tax issue and how we grow revenues. Here's what we do now: if you don't maintain your property, we reduce your assessment and we lower your tax liability. if you maintain your property and fix it up and add to the neighborhood, we increase your assessment and increase your tax rate. We don't have to keep doing that. Washington, D.C. has a very progressive property tax system where if you have an inhabited residential property, the tax rate is less than 1%. Our tax rate is 2.25%. So it's far more than double. But in Washington, if you have a vacant property, whether it's residential or commercial, and it's vacant for more than a year, the tax rate goes to 5%. And if you have a blighted property, the tax rate goes to 10%. So what you're doing is you're creating an incentive. Fix it up, put it into use, make it a productive part of the tax base, and get residents in it or businesses in it, or pay a higher tax rate. I think that's creating an incentive to force people to either invest or divest. What we do is we make it affordable for property owners to sit for decades, pay minimal taxes while they drag down the quality of life in our neighborhoods. We can do this differently. Washington has a good system. The land bank, which I served on the task force for months and months on, we need a land bank to start to redevelop and stabilize these 47,000 properties.
But we have a land bank.
No, we do not.
What the city does is that land bank, the land that they control, the land that they're talking about, goes to huge developers, and we don't know where it goes. Or they use some of the money to tear down some houses rather than developing neighborhoods. I mean, what would you do differently?
No, we don't have a land bank. We don't have a land bank that totally reforms the tax sale process in the city and captures the revenues that are lost now. We don't have a land bank that assembles all of these 47,000 properties and then puts them back out into productive use. And maybe the productive use is not rebuilding new houses. It's creating a green space in the neighborhoods, or it's putting a community center in the middle of the neighborhood and then inviting the private sector to build around it. Here's what our traditional model has been. We subsidize the developer to come in and build housing. What I'm talking about doing is subsidizing the public space. Let's create some public amenities and public spaces and then invite the private sector to develop around it, not subsidize the developer to drive down the cost. We could be for the cost of what we spend now to create one new affordable housing unit, we could help four or five people buy their existing homes and become homeowners. Same amount of money, but we'd be helping five people instead of one.
We're talking with Jody Landers, who is running to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. The election for the nomination for the Democratic nominee is next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday.
And by the way, Lou, your organization and you are just the kind of person that I look forward to working with in terms of developing minority businesses and opportunities in our communities in the city.
And he's working hard to get people to pay attention to North Avenue.
Yes.
So, and we'll be back with Jody Landers in a moment. And Brian, you're the first caller up after this break from the segment. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. We have a couple of emails here, and two more just came in. We're going to read those, so stay with us. We'll be right back with Jody Landers and some questions. I have some questions this next half hour, too, so we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center providing research, treatment, and education to further the prevention of and cure of cancer. Online at www.umgcc.org, or the number for more information is 1-800-888-8823. Or you can go to steinershow.org and click on the University of Maryland Medical Center's banner, and the information will be right there. Former Vice President of the Greater Baltimore Board of Realtors, former Baltimore City Council member, community activist, and now mayoral candidate, Jody Landers for the City of Baltimore. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Brian, you're on the air.
Yes, this question is for Mr. Landers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, you know, since you've served under all of these past administrations, Should you take some kind of responsibility for the city being the way it is, especially since you served two terms on the city council?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons I'm in this race. I take responsibility for the city and the condition it's in. And I decided that if I really want to do something about it, I have to get in this race. I have to make, you know, talk about these issues and where the city is headed in the future. You know, the city this year, we've been coasting along because of the real estate boom in the mid and early part of this past decade. All of the tables have been reversed now. We're not seeing growth in the tax base. We're seeing a decline. The city tax base declined by close to $1 billion this year. That equates to $22 million in just 1 year in money that would be coming to the city. So our situation, and my crystal ball says the federal government is not going to bail us out. The state government is not going to bail us out. We need to start to work to rebuild our base and be able to pay for the services that are important to us. But the problem that I have is I don't think this current administration is taking responsibility for the current status of things. I mean, the mayor's been in office for 17 years. I've been out of office for 17 years. But I'm willing to step up and say, yeah, I have all of us who care about the city have some responsibility for the current state of the city. That's why I'm hoping more people take an interest in this election and will come out and participate.
Thank you for the call, Brian. And is it Lynette or Janet? It is on the next caller up, and we'll get to you on rebuilding houses. We'll come to your call next. I want to read this email first. Dr. Alonzo has improved educational outcomes, test scores, attendance, lowering truancy, and reduced suspensions, to name a few, for city schools for the last 4 years, and yet you question his effectiveness. Today, he was named to a national education board that does rigorous assessments of school systems nationwide by the Secretary of Education. Would you care to comment? Talking about the article in today's paper, he was named to the National Assessment Governing Board today, one of seven new members named by Secretary of Education Arne Duncan.
Look, I have a lot of respect for Dr. Alonzo, but that doesn't mean he can't do a better job, and I applaud him for the recognition that he's getting. What I'm doing is I'm listening to what people are saying as we're going around the city, and I can tell you that there are parents and teachers and administrators who believe that they are not being heard by this administration. And I take nothing away from the accomplishments of Dr. Alonzo, but I believe that we need to listen to all voices in the system. The fact is, there are teachers and students and parents who do not feel that schools are safe. And there are a number of schools in the city, in the system, that are not performing up to par. This whole, you know, test alteration scandal that surfaced. I don't fault Dr. Alonzo for that, but there are some things in the system where when we're creating rewards or disincentives for people not to do well on the test, or when we tell a school that if you suspend too many children, you're going to be labeled as a persistently dangerous school, and you as a principal are going to suffer, what does that do? I think it compromises the principal's independence in making the decision about what they should be doing in order to protect the safety of the children there. And I can tell you this, there's a lot of inconsistency in the way the behavioral standards and policies are enforced in the system. And the principals and the parents and the teachers will tell you this. In some schools, they're rigorously enforced, and in other schools, they are not. We need to bring some consistency to that. And I'm not talking about putting children out on the street, but I'm saying if there are a handful of kids who are making it dangerous or bullying in a school and creating an environment that other children can't learn, we need to handle them in a different way. And I don't think that that's being done.
Before we go back to the phones, Lynette, you're going to come up. I want to ask you a question here, and then we have an email I want to get to that came in as well. And this is a question we asked yesterday as well. This is about your thoughts on the campaign for fair wages in the Inner Harbor and the United Workers. I'm reading this as it came in from somebody. Do you believe that we need to give developers tax breaks and subsidies to attract them to the city? Do you agree with placing requirements for minimum wages, fair working conditions, and benefits for workers at businesses that receive city money.
I do think that there are times and situations and areas where we do need to have some incentives in order to get businesses to locate there. I think we've reached a point, though, in some locations, like Inner Harbor East, for example, that we should no longer be giving any kind of subsidy there. The first building, the second building, there's an argument to be made in order for the company, the business to locate there, we needed to provide some incentive. But by the time you have seven buildings there, you've reached critical mass, I don't think we should be doing that. Should we be putting additional restrictions on? I would say no.
What do you mean by a restriction?
Well, in other words, are we going to put I'm not in favor I'm in favor of retracting or restricting the tax credits or the tax breaks that we're going to give to businesses. I'd much rather see us give those tax breaks in the smaller neighborhoods and in the commercial districts scattered around the city, not necessarily downtown. But on the other hand, I'm really not in favor of layering on a lot of other requirements on a business. I think business has to
be paying the minimum wage or living wage.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to pay the minimum wage.
Living wage.
They're going to have to pay the minimum wage. But we're not going to get the businesses. The more regulation we layer on, the less likely we are to attract the businesses. We're in a competitive environment. Now, if there was a minimum wage requirement for all companies that locate in the Baltimore metropolitan area, that might make sense. But for the city alone to put on a minimum wage requirement, we are just going to chase business out of the city. And we can't afford to do that. We've already lost. We lose jobs every single year because we can't compete. So, you know, I want to see people have a living wage, but I want to see people have a job at all. What's happening now is people can't get any job, minimum wage or otherwise.
I'll come back to that. Let me go back to phones, as I promised. Lynette in Baltimore, you're on the air. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Jody Landers, running to be the next mayor of Baltimore, is our guest. Lynette, welcome to the show.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my comments and questions. I really wanted to know your thoughts more about educational reform, especially as it relates to technical type of training, because some of the things that you just alluded to were jobs. And part of when I see all the contractors that come in to fix the water pipes, and they have entirely Latino crews, none of which I necessarily think came out of downtown near Fells Point, it makes you really wonder as to, well, who's getting the money for what the city even requires? Why can't we train kids at Morgenthaler on how to work on public works, et cetera? And I'd like to hear your ideas about that.
You know, I fully agree, and I think that where we've let children down, we don't do enough in the way of job training and technical skills training. We have young people who are graduating from high school and then going to these private technical schools and having to finance $25,000 and $30,000 or $40,000 in tuition in order to get the technical training for either IT positions or electrical technicians. We should be doing that right in our high schools and doing a better job of pairing with industry around training young people in technical fields, because there are a tremendous amount of jobs in that area. And, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we should be doing more of that. But that's something that we're going to have to do in partnership with the community and parents and the school system. That's not something that somebody's just going to issue an edict and saying, you know, it's going to happen overnight. But that is a direction that I think we have to go in order to create a job base here and open up opportunities. And when you talk about that kind of training, you're also talking about not necessarily people who have to go get once they have that skill, they can set up their own business.
An email here, interesting one, something about we talked about before we went on the air. With three viable and intelligent, exciting challengers, it's not likely that any of you will win the primary against an incumbent backed by the most powerful local officials. I naively assume that all three of you really want to change, and that means two of you backing out and supporting the third, or else the vote will be split and SRB wins. Baltimore runs as usual, full of chaos and missed opportunities. Have the three of you discussed this at all?
The current mayor only wins if people don't come out and vote. I fundamentally believe that. I, in as I go around the city, there is a lot of dissatisfaction with this current administration. The mayor has hid behind all of these high-profile endorsements, has refused to come out other than on four occasions under her very tight control to confront the public and answer the tough questions, like I'm doing right now on this program. You know, that is unacceptable to me. And I'm not just talking about as a candidate. It's unacceptable to me as a citizen of Baltimore who cares about the future of this city. So, no, I don't think it's an a fait accompli. I think if people accept that and accept what the pundits are saying, it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I don't think it has to be. I think there's an opportunity for myself or any one of the challengers to win if people will come out and pay attention and take seriously what we're talking about in terms of the current status of the city. You know, one of the things the mayor, I've heard the mayor say this a number of times, you know, we need to stay the course. Now is not the time for doing something reckless. I think it's reckless to keep doing what we've been doing because we are on a downhill slope.
Jody Landers in the studio. He is running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. The election is next Tuesday, September the 13th. Your time to make your vote heard. And I heard, or we will be heard, I should say. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You're going to say something, Jody? Then
I just want to say one of the things I am supportive of, Mark, and I think this is where the city can set a moral example. I am very supportive of the city paying a living wage on all city contracts. I think we should set that as a standard, and I'm very supportive of that. And when actually I happened to be working in the city council president's office at the time that bill was passed through the city council, and I'm very supportive of that because I think that's the kind of example that the city can show in terms of the contracts that it lets and making sure that all of its contract employees are paid a living wage. But that's very different than saying we're going to apply the same standard to any business who wants to locate in the city.
410-319-8888. And Will, you're on the air.
Jody, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
I got a quick question for you. When you're talking about jobs, same thing that we as a big city don't have that most big cities do have is a real emphasis on entrepreneurship. A lot of cities have micro business loan funds. They have a small business resource center that works. Ours seems to be, I guess it's open, but it doesn't function or it's woefully understaffed. And, you know, the best entrepreneurs in our city seem to be the drug dealers on the corner. And if we could harness an entrepreneurship in a way that may be a way to bring jobs where, as you stated, I think, eloquently, that, you know, companies are not willing to come. As mayor, how would you focus on getting the entrepreneurial spirit of each of us or as individuals sort of ramped up and running as a way to create jobs and also, frankly, as a way to export Baltimore? I mean, there's so many companies in this town that make things, but none of them say made in Baltimore on them.
Yeah.
How do you capture the fact that we are an entrepreneurial city and that may be one way to sort of pull us out of the doldrums, whereas I believe right now, frankly, we just do not focus at all on entrepreneurship. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. And actually, these 47,000 vacant housing units offer an opportunity for entrepreneurial initiative where you get people who could come in. And I constantly have people come up and say, you know, if I could just get a hold of two or three or five of these houses, I'd invest my time and money. I'd train people to how to rehab houses. We don't make it easy. Our whole permitting process and the way we the hoops that we put small businesses through to get permits doesn't make a lot of sense either. So I think streamlining that process, being more inviting to entrepreneurial initiatives, and like you said, the microloans, I love, you know, the idea of making it easy. And that's something that I think that the city could partner with the philanthropic community and some of the large banks in Baltimore to put together a pool of money that would be used to help with small loans for entrepreneurs who maybe don't have the money to buy the pickup truck that they need or the towing equipment or the snow blower or whatever it is in order to get their enterprise started. I love that idea of pulling together the capital to do that. That would be the kind of thing that I see us investing some of our bond funds in order to use that as a leverage to get some of the private and philanthropic money into the pool as well.
So what is the Jody Landers plan for vacant houses? And getting rid of 47,000 abandoned and vacant homes in the city.
Well, I already told you that I would completely revamp the property tax structure. So we're going to make it much more costly for people to sit on vacant properties. Instead of paying a minimal tax, their tax is going to quadruple if they have a vacant property that's been there for more than a year. And if they don't want to do something with it, then I want to create a land bank that will do something with it. And the land bank is an entity that's wholly owned by the city, that's sole responsibility is to manage and stabilize and put these properties back out into productive use. We have a very convoluted system right now. Mark, if you wanted to buy a vacant house in the city, it could take you as long as a year to get title to it. The law department's involved, the comptroller's office is involved, the housing department's involved, the $5,000, if you're buying it for $5,000, the contract has to go before the Board of Estimates. We have to streamline that process. We have to make it easier for entrepreneurs and investors who are serious and have a proven track record to get a hold of these properties and begin work immediately. I've been involved in this project called Project Scope since 2001. The first properties were listed in 2003. This was a special project that the Board of Realtors and the Beef Foundation did with the city. We're marketing city-owned vacant houses. Since 2003, there have been almost 300 properties sold, and it's netted $6 million to Baltimore City. So these are vacant, derelict, abandoned properties. The buyer has to agree to fix the property up within 18 months. Of the 300 properties that have been sold, about 180 to 190 of them have gone all the way through to rehab and occupancy permits. So, there are examples of what we can do. It's just there's no sense of urgency in city government to get this stuff done.
Vincent, we're going to come to your call next. I'm going to ask this really interesting question. Nobody really talks about this very much. We're a city that's known for its underground art scene. People come from all over America to come to the city, both in black and white communities. Unfortunately, they're not often racially mixed, which I wish I could see, but they're everywhere. And so one thought came actually from one of my producers, which was, do you plan devoting city resources to fostering that community? What are your ideas for encouraging young creative people to come to and stay in Baltimore? And besides the city arts building, because even though it's a great asset, the rent there is still too much higher, too high for people, young people to afford. So what is your what's your proposal to kind of take that energy out of that community that comes out of Morgan, that comes out of MICA, that comes out of all these institutions, and we have this vast resource here? What do you do with it?
Well, that's part of what's fueling the Station North, the arts district down there, and other pockets around Baltimore City. I mean, I think we need to tap into that. But there's one thing. Some of these communities in these neighborhoods are really homegrown. When you start to put too much structure in it, people back away, because – all of a sudden you're bringing some structure and you're bringing some rules to it. Some of these things I think the city actually just needs to stand out of the way and let these organic neighborhoods and cooperatives and these artist communities develop. When you go in and
but
you
how do you
impose,
get the city to get out of their way so they can actually develop the places and be in them?
And that's where I think we need to engage in a dialogue with these folks. I remember taking a tour of the Copycat building.
Yep.
Anyway, it was really interesting because, there were no sprinklers in it. And I questioned whether the fire escape routes really met the code as it exists today and whether people were safe. But the people who lived there loved it and they thought it was great. I don't know. Maybe we need to look at some kind of special exceptions to that. Well, on the other hand, we have a responsibility to make sure that health and safety codes are complied with. That adds to the cost of these projects. I like to have a dialogue. And by the way, I think MICA and these other schools, these arts programs, have been great for the city. I heard a great, wonderful presentation that Doreen Bolger did, who's the director of the Baltimore
BMA.
Museum of Art. And she is very plugged into this kind of underground art scene and does a great job of promoting it. And I would like to be supportive of that.
One of the things, that, another issue here is the issue of public transportation. We have this incredible Charm City Circulator. It's wonderful. But it runs along routes that are already serviced. Regular folks, working people use it, but it's often used by people who just tourists and stuff. So I wonder how you plan to build a comprehensive, efficient, accessible public transportation system in Baltimore, which does not exist.
Do I have more than a year to do it? I don't.
You have 4 years if you're elected. Okay, you have 4 years.
Is that all? Well, I agree with you. We don't have a very good transportation system. And one of the things that I think that the city has to do, and this ties into our whole economic development strategies, we need to do a better job of working with the state around coordinating bus and transportation routes to make it easier for people to get to work. I stood out on the corner of Park Heights Avenue and Northern Parkway. I do sine waves every morning. So from 6:30 to 8:30, we're at different intersections all around the city.
Where you can be tomorrow.
We are going to be I'll have to look at my calendar.
I'm sure.
Friday, I know we're at Hill and Road and 33rd Street.
All right.
Tomorrow, we're at Druid Hill and McCullough.
Okay.
So where they come together tomorrow morning. But in any event, I stood there and watched people wait for 40 minutes for a bus. And when the bus came by, in one case it was full and the person couldn't get on. I said, where are you going to work? Now, mind you, this is at Park Heights and Northern Parkway. He tells me he works over in Rosedale. I said, how are you going to get to work? He said, well, because the bus was 20 or 25 minutes delayed, he was going to be late for work. So he's missing time. I mean, we need to do a better job of coordinating with the state. That's not just a city problem. That's coordinating with the state transportation system to make sure that the buses run on time. And I'd be very interested in setting up like an ombudsman program so that we could interface with city residents to go after the state to do a better job of coordinating.
There's a conservative
services.
Think tank that offers a thing that most people who are Democrats don't like. We're saying, why not license folks who have their own, instead of having these illegal cabs, license them as jitney buses, let them stop at the curb, pick people up, and take them to work. As long as they're insured and licensed, let them use that system. If the state can't do it, let people put themselves to work, and they'll make, people will make money, it'll be honest money, and use the bus stops to take people to where they have to go.
I have a daughter who uses both the taxi cab service and the sedan services in Baltimore in order to get to work. We live in Northeast Baltimore. She works downtown. That's what she relies on for her transportation. And she's developed a small group of four or five people who she regularly works with. And if she can't reach one, she reaches another and has her own deal worked out with how much they charge her. So, yeah, I agree with you. That makes a lot of sense, too. And that creates jobs for people.
We have about a minute left, or a little bit more, not too much more. Do you have a closing thought as you depart the show?
My closing thought would be, please, Baltimore residents, take this election seriously. Don't believe that it's already settled and that the person who's raised the most money has to win. It does not have to be that way. If people get out and exercise their vote and their franchise to select the next leader of this city, we can make a difference. So I urge you to get out there and participate in this election. You know, I'd like to ask you to vote for me, but my first thought is don't vote for the status quo. You know, if you're not going to vote for me, look at all of the candidates and make a decision based on who has the best vision and the plan for taking this city forward. I got into this because I am not convinced that the current incumbent has a vision for where they want to take this city or the wherewithal to do it. When that person sits in that office and says, we should just keep doing what we've been doing, that should be a wake-up call to everybody in Baltimore. If you think you're better off now than you were 5 years ago or 10 years ago, by all means, vote the status quo. But if you don't, then I challenge you. Get out and vote next Tuesday.
Jody Landers is seeking to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. The election is next Tuesday. All day you can vote. When's early voting?
Early voting is today, tomorrow, and Thursday. I mean, yeah, it was yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Thursday is the last early voting day.
And then you can get out there and vote on Tuesday.
But
vote. If you live in Baltimore City, vote. It's your city to take hold of. And Jody Landers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. I'm going to remind you on the way out of here that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We're going to take a short break and come back. We have a chock-full hour heading up our way. Billy Arellano from Community Development is talking about mortgages and how to save your house. He'll be here shortly. And then we'll talk once again with Shorty and Rob Fix about this crazy case where Baltimore County is trying to put a man in jail because he put a toilet as protest on a lawn. And they want to put him in prison. And we are saying, you know, they won't comment on it here, but they're saying, I'm saying that if he was a white student, he wouldn't be facing this charge right now. He'll be on the show to talk about it.